You're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com, bringing you the freshest radio in Brooklyn since 2009. Hear directly from chefs to farmers, artists to architects, authors to brewers, and everyone in between. Check out all of our shows on our website or by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. On behalf of everybody at HeritageRadioNetwork.com, we'd like to send a special thank you to the Hearst Ranch, our biggest supporter and longest-running sponsor since we first started in 2009. Hearst Ranch is the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef. Since 1865, the Hearst family has raised cattle on the rich, sustainable native grasslands of the Central California coast. The result is beef with extraordinary flavor that's as memorable and natural as the surrounding landscape. For more information, visit www.hearstranch.com.
You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby. You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby. You're listening to Cutting the Curd, hosted by Ann Saxelby, broadcast live to the cosmos on the Heritage Radio Network.
Welcome to another episode of Cutting the Curd. I'm your host, Ann Saxelby, and my co-host and producer of the show is Sophie Schlesinger. And today we are going to be continuing our State of Cheese series, talking with two cheesemakers from Maryland. On the first segment of the show, we're going to have Holly Foster from Chappells County Creamery in Easton, Maryland. And on the second segment of the show, we're going to be chatting with Matt Cedro of Firefly Farms in Maryland's Allegheny Plateau. So, Holly, are you with us on the line?
Yes, I am, Anne.
Oh, thanks so much for taking the time to join us.
Oh, thank you. What an honor it was to be asked to do this. Thank you.
I'm excited, too, because this is my home state.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, Sophie's from Bethesda.
Yeah.
All right. I did not know that. That's great.
So can you tell us a little bit about your farm and how you got started?
Sure. My husband has a background in farming. His parents are still farming to this day. His dad will be 82 in September, and I can't keep up with him. But my husband has a bachelor's degree in animal science, and we have been farming with his dad for 8 years, and then we decided to buy a farm of our own. And so when we bought our farm about 14 years ago, there was nothing here but an old chicken house and a farmhouse. So my husband always has loved cows, such as his dad, but his dad was not dairying at the time. He dairied younger in his life and then got out of it, but always had cows around. So my husband also milked cows on college campus with his best friend, so he just loved the cows. So when we bought our farm 14 years ago, the first thing he did was ran out and bought some little heifer calves, and that was my first experience in true farming. I grew up in town on roller skates and had friends next door, and very small town, but nothing like growing up on a farm. So I was learning farming. I was put right in front of it and was loving every minute of it. And to this day, I'm still learning. There's, you know, it doesn't ever stop. But after we raised a few replacement heifers and groups and all, we really got a liking to it. And my husband said, you know, I really want to milk cows. And I was floored. I was like, what? Why? He just loves them. He said, you know, farming's in my blood, and you're not going to get it out. I just love it. I said, hey, whatever you want to do, we'll do. So the more he got talking with it and talking about it and going over things and started to plan things, he knew that we really should have a value-added something to go along with that. And so we were looking into the cheese. At that time, I was a stay-at-home mom, and learning farming, and he asked me, he said, you know, what would you think of going and learning how to make cheese? And I said, hey, I'm there. You know, I love learning and making pies and things like that, so learning how to make something, I'm there. And So being a very kind of a backwoods girl, if you will, I'm not the go-to-the-mall shopper kind of person, but not real adventurous, he said, well, how about Cal Polytech State University in San Luis Obispo, California?
Oh, wow.
So that was a big jump for me to just jump on a plane, fly across country by myself, and take a cheese course. But that was the beginning of our new adventure together in this adventure that it has been. So we started taking classes and courses and all, believe it or not, 11 years ago.
Wow.
And have very slowly put this together piece by piece since there was nothing here. And with that said, I got addicted to cheese making. I did not have a hobby. It now became a hobby and an addiction. So I had to take more cheese courses and buy more books. And so with that being said, I told my husband, I said, look, we're raising all these replacement heifers, but there is no cow that's giving us milk on the farm. We were getting milk from a local dairy farmer who actually was my husband's, still is my husband's great friend that he went to college with, making cheese and yogurt and things in the home from their milk. And I said, okay, this dairying lifestyle seems to be more involved than just a job for you. It sounds more like a lifestyle for the entire family. And, oh, was I right? So I told him, I said, I have to have a cow to work with this and just to see this. And I wanted to get a really good grip on the quality of milk because, as we were discussing, becoming dairy farmers was what kind of a dairy farmer do you want to be?
Well, sure, and what breed of cows do you want to
exactly.
focus on? And yeah.
Right, so many questions to be answered and to do this. So we had to do all this. And so that's when I said, okay, I want a grass-fed Jersey cow in my backyard before anything goes up construction-wise, and I got to see and make sure this is working for me to be this involved in this. And I didn't think he took me seriously until Christmas Day. Like 8 years ago, I literally got a cow for Christmas, and I had no idea
awesome
that was going to happen.
Did so it have a bow on it?
He did not. But you know what? With those eyes looking at me on Christmas morning, I wouldn't have not have noticed the bow.
I just fell
in love with that cow right then and there. And, you know, 10 years ago, I was scared to death of a cow. You know, I just was intimidated by their size. So he started that adventure with that and said, oh, now go milk her. That Jerry's your cow. You know, you'll learn how to. So we had nothing here. So with that, for a whole year, her name is Rainey. We milked Rainey in our garage, and she was out in the lot grazing with her pony, and she was a pet. She was our family cow, and I loved it.
From that time until when you got licensed as a creamery, how long did that take?
Wow. A year of milking Rainey and just using her milk as a family cow, and then we were putting the dairy side of our project up in the end of that year. So we had to build a barn, you know, and we had to build a parlor. We had to put everything up from scratch. There was nothing here. And then a year after within a few months after dairying, so we started dairying five cows. Milking five cows in our new parlor.
Wow.
We were so excited. We looked down in the milk tank, and we were so excited when you got the milk, and the paddle wasn't even reaching the milk. You know, we're like, oh, we need more cows.
Yeah. They don't seem to make a lot of small-scale dairy equipment. It tends to be, yeah.
They don't. So with that, we just eased into our herd and slowly grew with that. And with that growing, several things had happened that helped us make these decisions that were next on our list. One was I had our fourth child a month after we started milking in our dairy parlor. So I took some time off with her. And in that time when I was with her, I started planning the creamery side of the business. The building was here, but there was no equipment in it. And my husband's still working with my father-in-law on his farms. There was a large barn fire, and they race horses here in Maryland also, and they lost 10 of their best race horses one night in a barn fire. And that set us back really, really bad, financially, emotionally, the whole works. Mm-hmm. So we knew we just didn't have the extra money after buying the farm, putting the dairy up, buying cows, buying a tractor, the whole nine yards, that we could not go out and purchase cheese equipment and take a shot in the dark, if you will, because people would look at me, they're like, you're going to what? You think that's going to go here on the eastern shore of Maryland, a cheesemaker? Never.
What do they know? Like, well, you maybe, know better.
right. So someone gave us a bright idea that, well, you know what? Maybe you should start marketing, have someone else make the cheese for you while you market it and kind of set the business up and then just ease into it. And I thought that was a terrible idea. My husband thought it was a wonderful idea, and he won. I wanted to have control over everything, meaning the quality of the milk, you know, and then me making the cheese and then me marketing it. But I forgot there was only 24 hours in a day.
Right. That's an easy thing. I forget like that mindset. Regularly. Yeah. Yeah. Especially if you have 4 kids. I mean, that's like, that's very impressive.
Yeah.
Either that or insane.
Yeah.
So I went up with that idea. I was okay, and so we shopped around, and that was left up to me. I found a wonderful cheesemaker. I was so impressed. I called him one night on the phone. He called me back. I was up to his place early the next morning. I looked around. I was sold right away. He had some different kind of styles of cheese that were made, because at that time there was 2 other, maybe even 3 other Maryland dairy farmers that were shipping their milk to Pennsylvania, having it made into cheese, and I wanted something different. I wanted to add something, you know, something different to it. And he was different. So I went with that, and a few weeks later, when we were supposed to ship up our first milk, our first load of milk for him to make that, he called me and said, I've thrown my back out. I can't make the cheese. And I was devastated. I thought, okay, well, we'll call the milk callers and we'll rearrange this. Well, I couldn't get a hold of him. It was at night, you know.
Mm.
And I called him back and I said, hey, would it be too much if I came up and made my own cheese out of your equipment, if you could walk me through it? And he said, what a great idea. So I followed the milk truck up to Pennsylvania to make my first batch of cheese. And you would have thought you had given me $1 million. There was nothing better that was going on in life than to see something come full circle, from there was nothing here on the farm to we raised our baby heifers to the milking parlor to they had babies, now they're giving milk, and now I milked them that morning, and then I took a shower and followed the milk truck up, and now I'm going to turn it into cheese. It's such a complete circle. So
what kind of cheese did you make?
Well, there we made mainly cheddars. I really wanted to start out with something that everybody kind of likes. It's something that, if it didn't go, cheddar only usually gets better with age. So I didn't want something I was going to have to throw out if it didn't sell right away. Also, there was another type of cheese that he has an aging room, a cave under the ground. So we actually can get some nice, bloomy rind cave age cheeses from that. So we do kind of similar to a French tome cheese we call Chapelle there, and that really has been taking off very well.
Wow, that's and so how many different kinds of cheeses and dairy products do you guys make now?
Now that we are doing, we're doing the cheeses in both places, because now through that we saved our money and put the equipment in here on the farm. We're doing blue, feta, and yogurt here, so we're actually a grade A dairy also. And the blue has taken off so well that we're really just keeping focus on that because we need to keep up with the demand.
I think that's very smart. We were talking about, you know, a lot of cheesemakers feel pressure to kind of, you know, make a huge variety of cheeses. Yeah. And I think if you've got one that's working well, you know, it can be a lifetime pursuit to understand that one kind of cheese, you know,
yeah.
Or just to,
yes.
Like you said, keep up with the demand and create a strong brand for yourself. I think that's a really great idea. What's
right.
What's the blue called?
Bay Blue for the Chesapeake Bay.
Oh, I like that.
And our cheddar is Talbot Reserve for Talbot County.
Nice.
Oh, that is
very
so great.
Nice.
Well, this is so annoying, actually.
Happens.
The time always goes so fast. But
I'm so sorry.
Oh, no.
No. It's just we love talking to everyone who comes on the show, and it flies by.
But, well, if I just wanted our listeners to be able to learn more about your farm and get more information. Do you guys have a website that people can go to?
Yes. It's www.chapelscreamery.com.
ChapelsCreamery.com, and this is Ben Holly Foster, cheesemaker extraordinaire. It has been so nice to talk with you, and I really hope you'll come again on the show sometime, because obviously we have a lot more to talk about.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you very much for having me.
Thanks, you, Holly.
Baby, getting tired of you. Well, standing on the corner, lonesome as can be. You said that you would meet me, but you stood up for little me. I'm getting tired of you. Waiting round for hours, pacing to and fro. Would like to leave here, baby, but there is no place to go. Getting tired, baby, getting tired of you.
Following is a public service announcement from Heritage Radio Network. Tune in to Greenhorn Radio, hosted by Severin von Scharner Fleming, every Thursday at 2 p.m. Greenhorn Radio is radio for young farmers by young farmers. Helmed by acclaimed activist, farmer, and documentarian Severin Fleming, Greenhorn Radio is a weekly phone interview session surveying America's cutting-edge under 40 farmers. Again, that's every Thursday at 2 p.m. on the Heritage Radio Network.
All right, and we are back on Cutting the Curd. That was apparently the Orioles doing a little doo-wop with a nod to Maryland. We're doing the State of Cheese in Maryland today on Cutting the Curd. And our second guest is Matt Cedro of Firefly Farms. Matt, are you with us?
I'm here. How you doing?
I am great. And did I say your last name right? I'm like paranoid.
You did. You got it right.
Oh, fantastic. Awesome. So before, in our first segment, we had Holly Foster of Chappells County Creamery on the line. And something that came to my mind that we didn't get a chance to ask her was just, you know, what's going on in the state of cheese in Maryland? Are there a lot of cheesemakers? Do you guys have any kind of guilds or organizations or festivals?
Right now, there's really no guild. I know we're part of the American Cheese Society, which is a national organization. As far as Maryland goes, though, I think there are a few new startup companies, coming along. I'm not too familiar with any other ones other than Holly down at Chapel Hill and a couple of the other goat creameries down east. So we're as far west as you can go in Maryland. So it's kind of I don't know how to explain it. We are not really too much contact with anybody else down east. So.
Sure. So you're sort of more near the Pennsylvania. Are you up in the is it Pennsylvania and what would that be, West Virginia?
Right. We're right in that corner where Pennsylvania is north of us and West Virginia is, I think it's about 15 miles west from us.
Wow.
So you can be in PA in 5 minutes and you can be in West Virginia in 10 minutes from where we sit.
I'm embarrassed to say I've never even been to that part of Maryland and I
really?
Lived there till I was 18, but I've always wanted to kind of go out there cuz I've heard how beautiful it is, but
oh, it's great. I mean, we're at about 2700 feet in elevation, so you know, today it was 78 degrees and I mean, that's kind of warm. Getting kind of warm. Tomorrow it's supposed to be 80 or 85, but I know it's really hot down where you guys are at.
Oh yeah,
it sure is.
Brooklyn is just like a sweat box right now.
Yeah.
But so tell us about your farm. What kind of cheese do you make on Firefly Farms? And do you raise your own? Do you milk your own animals? Do you buy milk from neighboring farms? How do you do it?
Well, originally we started off. We were farmstead and. When I came on, the owners were milking the animals and making the cheese and everything, and And eventually, a few years later, the herd just got so large it was getting to be too much. So we actually have 4 family farms up in Springs, PA, which is about 2 or 3 miles over the border into Pennsylvania, that provide the goat's milk for us. So we are we're more, you know, just strictly a creamery right now.
Which is great because you're really spreading that economic, you know, you're creating, you know, saving farmland and creating jobs as you go. That's really
phenomenal. I mean, it started off with one farm that was supplementing what we needed, and then it went to 2, and then we sold our herd, and then 2 more joined on early last summer. So it's progressively just, you know, they're producing more and you know, able to expand their situation, and it's a great setup that we have going right now.
And that's amazing, because a lot of people, that's the biggest hurdle, especially for goat cheese producers, is actually finding people who, you know, are milking goats. So how did you cultivate those relationships, and who are the people who now, milk the animals that you use that you use to make your cheese?
Well, there's a few Amish farms, and, you know, like I said, when we started, the one that was just supplementing us was just a friend of one of the owners, and they had cows, and he said, hey, I'd like to try to get, you know, into goats, and he played around with it and very quickly got into it. And there was already some established goat herds up in Pennsylvania that supply a couple larger co-ops up in Pennsylvania, so it wasn't too difficult to find someone. But and then it just was kind of word of mouth. Our first producer had a family member who came in from out of town and got into it, and then he separated from that farm into his own, and then another friend saw what they were doing and thought it'd be cool to do, and, you know, they can make money and, do it with their existing setup. And then the third, our fourth producer, he's actually retired from one of the major airlines, and he had a family farm right with those other 3 family farms, and he moved back from the Midwest and got his setup going and very, very quickly and started up. So that's kind of how they came along. And, you know, we get every once in a while we'll get a local farm, they'll call us and they'll be processing cow's milk, and they're looking to switch over to goat's milk. I'm sure a lot of people know that you get more per pound for goat's milk than cow's milk. Of course the goats produce a lot less.
Yeah.
But you know, they balance out all those costs and everything, and goat's milk just seems to be the kind of the thing for the last 10 years. So that's definitely a good trend.
That's fantastic. Well, goat cheese is definitely my favorite kind of cheese. So the more goat cheese, the better.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So what kind of cheeses do you guys make? And how, well, I guess that's question number one. And then question number two is, how did you become a cheesemaker? Or you can flip those around if you want.
I was going to ask that too.
I'll flip them around. Originally, I've been with Firefly for 8 years now. And I was in the restaurant hospitality industry up in Pittsburgh, and my wife and I got married and we wanted to get out of that industry, so we just came down to basically a Deep Creek Lake is right near our creamery, so we've been coming down here vacationing and we wanted to move here. And I just saw a little ad in the newspaper for an apprentice cheesemaker and thought, wow, that'd be cool.
Who knew?
We just got married and no kids or anything, so we had that flexibility to just pack up.
Yeah.
You know, I interviewed a couple days later with the owners and put my notice in at work and packed our stuff up and moved down. And
wow!
And just have been going full steam ahead since then. So.
And then, how did you move from apprentice to, full-fledged cheesemaker? Did you just learn on the farm, or did you take some additional classes? Or,
well, I did a lot of instruction under Pablo, who's one of the owners. Pablo Solanet, he's one of the partners, and worked under him for a while. And then they started sending me to the Vermont Institute of Artisanal Cheese up at UVM up in Burlington. And that's a cool program they have up there. It's kind of like a continuing education course, but real intense. They bring in all, you know, some of the great cheesemakers from Europe and some of the guys from the Midwest, and it's one of those, like, you go up every few months for a week, take a week of courses, and you just kind of, I did that for over the course of 3 or 4 years, and just kind of learned a lot from books and, you know, the internet and our main supplier that supplies us with all of our cultures and a lot of our equipment and stuff, Margaret Morris. She's up at Glengarry Cheesemaking up in Canada.
We've got to get Margaret on the show. I feel like she is the fairy godmother of the American farmstead cheese movement.
She is. Oh, my God. I just got off the phone with her about 5 minutes before you guys called. It was one of those, oh, man, I'm kind of in a bind. And, you know, and I'm sure, and she does that all day long. And yeah. She's amazing. So, yeah, if you guys can get her on your show, that'd be great. And so, yeah, it's just kind of word of mouth. You know, a lot of other cheesemakers talk to each other, and they call each other up if, you know, they have questions or issues. And it's a neat industry, and that it seems like everybody's friendly, and everybody wants to learn and build their business and, you know, and just make, you know, just make cheese. It's cool to be able to make cheese for a living.
Yeah. So. And I guess then the next question is what cheeses do you guys make? Right. And then the next question is, where do you sell your cheeses? Is it a local market, or do you kind of branch beyond that?
Sure. Well, we make, right now, currently we're making 9 or 10 different types, and we make from a fresh plain shove. We do a couple soft ripened cheeses. We have a couple blue cheeses. We do a wash-rind cheese, a hard Italian-style cheese, and then we're always playing around with different stuff. We try to add on at least one product a year. So, you know, you spend a good part of the year developing, developing a single cheese with kind of your extra inventory of milk. And, as far as, you know, our marketing, we sell throughout the East Coast, mainly that Baltimore, D.C. corridor up into Philly and New Jersey, and then as far down, we have some distributors that distribute it down south, you know, down into North Carolina, and then Pittsburgh's a big market for us, a lot of restaurants up there. We have some distributors. Whole Foods Market carries our cheese, so that's kind of our big chain store that we deal with. They're a great company that, you know, has been with us since the beginning and, you know, helped us along the way as far as that goes. And a lot of word of mouth from the farmers markets. We do a lot of farmers markets down your way. We do the Baltimore Under the Bridge Market. We're at DuPont and, you know, a few others down there. So I think a lot of that word of mouth from those markets also helps. And, we have a website and everything.
And what is your website, just so our listeners can log on and see pictures of the farm and learn more about your cheeses?
It's fireflyfarms.com. And we also have a Facebook page now. I never thought I would say that we'd have a Facebook page, but we have a Facebook page, and we're getting on Twitter and all that stuff, and which is incredible. That's, everybody does that stuff now.
That's really true.
That's the big thing. So yeah.
It is a beast, but yeah, once you get the hang of it.
Yeah.
Every day, you know, more and more people, you know, you get more of these messages and stuff.
Yeah. So. Well, I can't wait to check out you guys at the farmer's market the next time I'm home at the DuPont market. That's my spot. So.
Yeah, that's our big one, and that's where the owners, the two owners live down in D.C. They split their time between the facility up here and down in D.C., and they're usually at the DuPont market.
Oh, great.
And we're also, right now, we're about a month away from opening up our new facility. We've been planning and construction for the last 2 or 3 years, and we're just putting in the finishing touches on our new creamery and retail market in Accident, Maryland, which is right north of the lake at Deep Creek. I'm sure a lot of your listeners are familiar with Deep Creek Lake.
Yeah.
And right there on the main drag. So look for us in the fall and throughout. So.
Cool. Yeah, that sounds like fodder for another good show, actually.
Yeah.
How to go about redesigning your cheese facility, or just designing it to begin with. I feel like everybody learns so much during that process. It would be really wonderful to hear your thoughts on that. Maybe we can
definitely.
A little follow-up.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we went from really, you know, basically Mike and Pablo, they went from being in their kitchen and aging cheese in their basement as a hobby, and now 10 years later, we're building this great new state-of-the-art, but still artisan-produced facility with a, you know, wine shop and all that. We'll import some, you know, other cheeses from up in the Northeast, and it's going to be really cool.
Awesome.
Very cool. Well, thanks for taking the time out to talk with us today, and I hope we can make it down to visit your spot.
That can be awesome.
All right, thanks so much.
Thanks, Matt.
And join us next week for another episode of Cutting the Curd on the Heritage Radio Network.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.
Saturday, July 23rd, Bushwick Block Party.
Block Party.
It's a party in the street.
Free pizza by Roberta.
Death Killer Death Wrestling.
Featuring the legendary Mad Dog Tosto.
Photo Booth by Ryan Slack.
Water World.
Closed by
Chimera Dactyl.
Mary Meyer.
Lauren Bogart.
Death Killer.
Asphalt Resistant Jeans.
All types of food for your face.
Sweet soda by
P&A.
Roberta's Bake Sale.
Heritage Foods
USA.
Orange Chaney Eating Contest
by the Orange Chaney Brothers.
Live music by
Alex Trujan.
Florida
Paper Twin.
Gang Sign.
The Netherlands.
Team Robespierre.
Wild Yak.
MC Todd and Bo Breezy.
Night Show.
Yeah.
Sponsored by
Martin Greenfield Clothers.
Free Fitness Studio.
Heritage Radio Network.
Free Williamsburg.
6 Point Beer.
Momo's
Sushi Shack.
Beer Box USA.
Planet of the Bates.
Bushwick Block Party. It's a party in the street.
All day long.